The following presentation was recorded at the 2001 Teachers Workshop at Faith Builders. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
For meaning to me, what I'm seeing in this, and then I want to speak to you about the importance of weaving these things into the school year that you are going to help create. The first word in the topic is developing, and you know that things are going to develop at your school this year, and things are going to develop in your classroom. They do every year. They will either develop intentionally or they will develop unintentionally. Something is going to develop at your school this year. Something is going to evolve and happen and take place. And what your school is and what your room is at the beginning of the year is not the same thing it is going to be at the end of the year. And as a teacher, you have an opportunity to either be proactive in that, to say, I'm going to have a hand in what develops. I'm going to be intentional about this. There are some things that I intentionally will seek to develop in my students or in my room or in my school this year. You can be proactive or you can just let it develop on its own. Either way, something is going to develop. What is happening at your school at the end of the year is going to be different than what happens at the beginning. And I'd like to encourage you to be intentional about it. You may not take any of the suggestions that Jonas and I offer this morning. You may have better suggestions of your own to follow. But do you have a little game plan for this year? This is what I would like to see develop at our school. This is how I would like our school to become stronger. The second word, or pair of words, is school spirit. Someone made the was talking along this line yesterday, and they used the words, "This is us." And your students will realize as they go through the year that this is us. This is what we are like. This is what our room is like. This is what our elementary or our high school is like. This is what our school as a whole is like. And they will have a positive feeling about that, or they will have a negative feeling. They'll have a feeling that this is us and I am happy about this. I am happy to be part of this room or this school. They will be content. Or there will be a discontent there. Something is missing or something is present that they're uncomfortable with. What type of a school spirit would you like your room or your school to develop this year? And this school spirit, it is developed by two groups of people. It is developed by the school staff. And it is developed by the school students. The staff has a role in laying out, making a way for the students. And I think primarily the role of the teacher in developing school spirit is maintaining a balance between two things that exist in every good school. Every good school has tradition. And we'll speak about that later on. Every good school has freshness to it, new ideas, changes. And it is the role of the teacher, of the staff members, to bring those two things into balance, to maintain a sense of tradition at school. This is the way that we are at this school. This is the way we were last year and 10 years ago, and it's the way we want to be 5 years from now at this school. Certain things that are important to us, our community values here. And the teacher has to maintain those things and not allow them to slip. The teacher also must bring freshness into the classroom, that there's a sense of newness there. Okay, can you get the balance between the old and the new? Every school has to have old something. This is the way it always is here. And we like it that way. We want to keep on being that way. And a sense of new. This is a new idea. This is something we haven't done before. That's your role as a teacher. You balance those two things. Students have the largest part to play in developing school spirit. And the way that I feel this is effectively done is through a student council And we could spend several workshops speaking about the role of a student council. I'm going to suffice to say this. There are things that students can do for your school that you as a teacher cannot do. They can bring something to your school that you can't bring. They can relate with other students, interest other students in ways that you cannot do it. A student council has to provide leadership for the student body. And we can't go into all the aspects of developing a student council. Types of things that a student council can do at your school require funding. And that is a sticking point for many small schools. It's a reason why student councils aren't used to develop school spirit. Those types of things take money, and we feel there's not enough money for the teachers and not enough money for curriculum. How can we spend money on students? I'd like to encourage you to find a funding source for your student council. And there are a variety of things that you can do. But the students operate through a student council, and that requires or equals funding or funds. Some suggestions would be things like exclusive rights to engage in certain activities like donut sales at school. Perhaps you could, if you have a student council, give them the right to 6 times a year sell donuts and hot chocolate or donuts and coffee at school in the morning for an hour. And they can charge for it. They can charge the teachers. They can charge other students. If no one buys it, they don't make anything. Perhaps student council would have the exclusive right to a sandwich sale in the community. They're the only ones at your school that can sell sandwiches. Perhaps they're the only ones at your school that can bring in pizza and sell it at school. So much a slice. Whoever wants to buy it, all the money goes to student council. Perhaps you can have some larger fundraiser that students are engaged in. They help participate in to support the school, and the school board can say, in return for their participation in organizing and encouraging student involvement, the student council can have X percent of the proceeds. 5% of what is raised will go to student council, whether it's $5 or $500. That encourages student participation. When students are encouraged and when students have funding, they can do unique things at school. They can pay for special speakers to come in and address your student body. They can buy PE equipment that you don't have to take out of your normal budget. They can help fund your Bible quiz team, which is an expensive thing. And they will willingly do this, and they will get excited about doing this because they see that they are causing something to happen. They are causing the money to exist, and then they are using that money and reinvesting it in other students. It's a way that you can help create school spirit. Student councils are also valuable things in other senses. Student council can organize spirit weeks at school, and those can involve a lot of different things depending upon what you choose to allow or not allow at school. If nothing else, it includes a color day. Most schools have colors they adopt, and student council can encourage colors other students to wear those colors and get a sense of you belong at this school, you participate. Student councils are very important in organizing fellowship days, and a fellowship day is something that I think every Christian school should have. A fellowship day is a day set aside in the school year, it may change from year to year, where you do something with another school. Not necessarily another Mennonite school, but most of us wouldn't have to go outside of our circles to find another school that we can participate in. It could be something like a field day where you invite neighboring Mennonite schools or perhaps travel to another community and engage in athletic activities with the other school. I know a lot of you come from very small schools, and you may think, well, we can't even have a ball game by ourselves. You know, there aren't enough for two sides, or at least not enough good players. It does not have to be of a competitive nature where it's you playing against them. It may be just that here we are, we're 4 small schools in this area. Why don't we, one day a year in the spring, get together, have a fellowship day, bring our students to one location, perhaps rotate it among the schools year by year, and together we play activities that individually we can't participate in because there are not enough of us to do it, or perhaps not enough equipment, or not adequate facilities. students develop school spirit on fellowship days because, in a very real sense, there's an us and there's a them. And you can much better get a sense of who us is if there is a them around who are not you. Not in a competitive sense, not in a sense where you're pushing other people away, but when they see other people coming to their school, this is our school. We want to make sure it's clean when they come. We want to make sure it looks the best it can when they come. We want to be on our best behavior when they come, and then vice versa when we go to their school. Respect is another word that is there. Respect is a multi-level undertaking. We all seek to rebuild respect in our schools, and I don't doubt that a school year goes by that someone at your school doesn't talk about respect. Perhaps board members talk about, we need to build some respect in this school. Maybe parents bring it up. Certainly teachers talk about it. And the reason that we often probably fail at building respect in our schools is because we approach it at one level. Perhaps it's expecting the students to respect the teachers, and an emphasis upon that. You know, use your yes, sir. Use your no, sir. Don't answer me in that tone of voice. Respect has to be built at all levels in a school. When you're developing school spirit, when you're developing respect, it's like a fabric. And a fabric is nothing but a bunch of little threads that are woven together to create something that is strong. If you want to build respect, you have to weave a fabric at school where the teachers respect each other and where the teachers respect the students. The students respect the teachers. The teachers respect the parents. The school respects the church. The church respects the school. Okay? You can try to build a fabric with a few of those threads. Students, you have to respect the teachers. The school has to respect the church. You weave all of them together, you have a stronger fabric. Okay? Is that a multi-level undertaking at your school? Or is it mostly focused on one level, that emphasis on respect? You can weave in other things like respect for property, respect student to other student. Build respect at every level in your school. Participation. As I said, a lot of you are from small schools, and a few of you are from larger schools. And I know that larger schools are seen sometimes as having more advantages in that they offer more to students or are able to offer more to students. This area of participation is an area where perhaps small schools have an advantage over larger schools. If you work at a small school, every student at your school is important. Every student at your school is needed to play the games, to conduct the activities. And the larger your school gets, the more likely it is there are students who literally are not needed at your school. They are not needed to play volleyball. They are not needed to play softball. They are not needed on Bible quiz team. They are not needed to answer questions in class because there are 20 other students who can answer questions better than they can in class. In school, it's important for you as a teacher to focus on participation. Is everyone in my class participating? Does everyone in my class feel as if they have the opportunity to participate? Or is there someone that has gotten the understanding through me or through other students that they are not needed? Their skills are not needed. They're not a valuable contributor to what's going on in this class. It's okay if they're not here because class will go just smoothly without them. Do you look for students in your class and in your school who are not participating? They are being marginalized. They are being pushed off to the side. And especially those of you who work at larger schools, you have a problem on your hands. You have important students, you have athletic students, you have smart students, and then you have students who are not those things. And are they the ones that when a game is organized and there's more than enough to play, they are always the ones that choose not to play? Why do they choose not to play? Because they know they are not needed. Their skills are not at the level of the other students' skills. When there are special activities or special electives or special opportunities that certain ones can participate in, they don't try to get in on that because there are enough others that want in on it. And those of you who have small schools, you have a special opportunity to make sure that there's a place for every student in your classroom. There is something that they need to do in order for this classroom to function. And I hope you seize that and work on that. Interaction is another word that is there. I'll spend a little more time here. Interaction is another one of these multi-level undertakings. What types of interaction do you want to encourage at school? There are some obvious interactions at school. You're talking to the student, and the student is talking back to you. That's a teacher-student interaction. That's going to happen at school. What types of interactions may or may not happen at school? There are student-to-student interactions. There are student-to-administration interactions, teacher-to-school board interactions, school-to-church interactions, teacher-to-parent interactions, grandparent-to-teacher interactions. And I think to develop interaction at your school, you have to approach it on different levels. There are things that you can do to encourage interaction at your school. Your school can hold a board teacher social. And if your school board does not invite your teachers to have a social with them once or twice a year, then perhaps you as teachers need to invite your board to have a social with you once or twice a year. They need to see you in an informal setting, and you need to know them in an informal setting. If it's not taking place, you are perfectly within your, it is within your realm of opportunity to make that happen. Invitations flow both ways. If they don't invite you, you invite them. To something at school, perhaps in the evening, invite them perhaps for a light supper and a volleyball game. Get to know your school board members in a way that you don't know them now. What about teacher interaction? Oh, we talk to other teachers all the time, all day long. You do, really. All day long you talk about school. You talk about students. Maybe you talk about parents or your principal. You talk to other teachers. Do you get involved in the lives of the other staff members at school outside of school? Do your teachers ever get together and do things together? Not just in small, perhaps exclusive groups, two elementary teachers that have students about the same grade age, perhaps they get together and go out to eat or do something together. What about as teachers? Does someone at your school encourage that or make opportunities for it? Why don't we, when we're grading achievement tests, have a carry-in that night for supper and all the teachers eat to school together and I'll bring hot dogs and hamburgers and you bring Jell-O salad and we will do something together. And after we all get our report cards done, we'll play volleyball. Just us. If there are enough of you to do that. There are things that you can do together. Okay, that's teacher interaction. What about interaction with parents? Is it limited to those parent-teacher conferences, or are there other opportunities given? Is there a day at your school when the parents come and play softball with the students and with the teachers? Is there an opportunity at your school where grandparents are especially invited in to come to the school and do something with their students? Those are types of interactions that you can build. You say, well, we've got student-to-student interactions in our school, and that's true, you do, but they are probably only at certain levels. High school students relating with high school students, fourth graders relating with other fourth graders. Can you bridge that gap? There are opportunities, especially in all schools, small or large schools, to create things like a buddy system where every high school student has an elementary student that is their buddy for a certain period of time, perhaps for a quarter or maybe for as much as a whole year. And during that time, you kind of have to work on it from the high school end, but you're expected to do some things with your little buddy. Perhaps it'll be a recreation day at school where you're supposed to team up and the games are going to be played in teams, an 11th grader and a 2nd grader as a team together that day. Perhaps they can do some tutoring and it's built into their schedule. In a study hall, you're going to go down to the 2nd grade and just whatever your 2nd grade buddy needs to do that day, you just do it with him. If he's working on his math, if he needs help, you help him. If he doesn't, you just sit there and encourage him. And you build interaction between students that are of different ages. The elementary students probably need less encouragement in that area after they overcome their fear of those big people, that they would enjoy being around that big person, going up and sitting in their class for a period and watching them take notes and listen to their teacher and interact in class. A buddy system is something that costs you nothing other than a little bit of time. And if you can give up a little bit of time, you can build interaction between students that otherwise would not interact with each other. And lastly, it says there the word traditions. This is where I'll spend the rest of my time. What is a tradition? I thought about that for quite a while. We all have traditions in our lives, whether they're family traditions or community traditions, and in some cases, score church traditions. As I'm defining it for my purposes, a tradition is an activity or an event that has attained permanence in a certain setting. An activity or event that has attained permanence. That means if you look this year, you see it, and if you look again next year or perhaps 2 years from now, you're going to see the same thing again. It's going to happen again. Doesn't mean it has to be annual. Certain time every year it happens. But it's something that's a characteristic about your school that it's reoccurring. It comes up again and again. And I think it is important for schools to build traditions. A tradition at school gives a sense of us. I belong at that school because I participate in such and such that if you go to that school, that's something you do. Maybe I'm an older person now, but that was my school. When I went there, I remember doing such and such, and you know what? They still do that at that school today. And perhaps I send my child to school there, and they come home and start talking about such and such. Well, you know what? 20 years ago, I did that in that same classroom. I went to that same school. We did the same thing, and they're still doing it today. It builds a sense of us in a community that can bridge generations. These are inclusive bonding activities. Okay, we do this at our school, and perhaps other schools do it, but they might not do it just like we do it at our school. Okay, I belong here because I participated in this event or at this activity, and this was the way we did this thing. What types of activities would this include? It can include something as simple as a fall cookout and hayride every year that perhaps a grade or a whole school engages in, where it's something that students know that's going to come. You get about to the end of October, and somewhere around the end of October, there's going to be a hayride night, and maybe there's going to be donuts and cider or whatever games your school might come up with, but there's going to be a hayride. It's going to happen every year, and every year that I go to school here, I'm going to go on a hayride, and I know about when it's going to come, and I know just about what it's going to be like. It can include things like special parent days at school, where if you're able to encourage your parents to do it, we know that the parents are going to be here on this day. Perhaps it's like a craft day at school. Some schools may run where the mothers come in and they kind of have a craft fair. And the students, the elementary students, participate in it. And perhaps those high school students that want to, they participate in it. And it's just something that's done every year or every several years. It involves the parents because it's something they like to do. It's a day out of the house for the mothers. It's a day doing something that they never find time to do at home. It's organized for them. They come to school, work on their crafts, and the elementary children know that's something we get to do too, once a year or every other year. My mom's coming, my aunt's coming, these other ladies at church are coming, these ladies that I don't know are coming, but we're going to have fun that day, and we're going to do something that isn't related to math or English, and I'd get to do it this year, and 2 years from now I'll get to do it again, and then after I'm out of elementary, I never get to do it again. But it's something special. I went to elementary there, and I got to do craft day every once in a while. Fellowship days fit in here, which are school-to-school events that we've already talked about, and that can become a tradition at your school. Those are things that you, as a staff, you have to plan those in advance. You have to contact people at other schools and say, would you be interested in doing something with us sometime next school year, far in advance, so teachers can plan it into their schedule. We would like your school to come to our school. You can come first thing in the morning, or perhaps you stay there and have a few hours of classes, and you come, and we're going to have lunch for you. And in the afternoon, we're going to have recreation together, or perhaps some other special activity that we're going to do together. You can plan it in different ways. You can intentionally say, we're going to spread this around. We're not going to make it a one school on another school activity. And this year, we're going to have a fellowship day with that school over there. Whether it's a school that's smaller than we are, or larger than we are, or the same size, we're going to invite them over here, and we're going to be the host this year. And perhaps they'll just come for a day of classes. They'll come in the morning, and they'll go to class with our students, and the regular lessons will be taught, and they'll get to sit in and see how it's done here at our school. And then next year, it's not going to be that way. Next year, they won't come to our school. Perhaps we'll go to their school, or perhaps it'll be a different school that we will pull in. And we will have school-to-school interaction, and it will become a tradition. Every year, we do such and such. At a school in Pennsylvania where I recently taught, there was a tradition of having fellowship days that had occurred in the past quite a while back, and then it had kind of slacked off, and then it started again. And I know that one of the things that those students really look forward to in high school every year is going down to Faith Mennonite High School and playing them in football, and hopefully beating them in football. But playing them in football, and that might not be something your school wishes to do, but it's something students want to participate in. It's something that there are no sick children that day. Okay? Do you have days at your school that are so special that there are no sick children? Nobody is sick. They drag themselves onto the bus and come to school. Because this is something that occurs at school. It only occurs on certain days. It's special. If you go to school, you get to catch it the years you are here, and once you're gone, you can't do that anymore. And that opportunity is gone out of your life. Special trips can be traditions at your schools too. A lot of you are from small schools. Do you have senior trips for those who choose to stick it out and stay with the program and complete their years of schooling? You should offer them something special, and it should be something traditional, something that occurs year after year. If you're a small school, you may say, well, we really can't afford to do that, and what fun is it to go on a trip by yourself anyway? Well, then you need to build another tradition. You need to build a tradition of interaction, participation with other schools. We're a small school, and here's another small school over here and another small school over here. And if we interact with each other on an ongoing basis, our students will know their students. Not perhaps be best friends, but they see that person in town somewhere in another community enough to walk up and say, hi, remember me, I'm from such and such a school, and you came to our school, and we did such and such together. And if that is developed over years, students from small schools can take things like senior trips together, and it can be known that's what's going to happen. The seniors from this little school this year and the seniors from this school and this school will together in their junior year and through their senior year be planning a school trip together. And it won't be an awkward situation where complete strangers are thrown together. They know each other. They have some common background and traditions that have been built up. And we know that when I graduate from school, if I stick it out, there are two girls from that school over there, and a fella and a girl from that school over there, and three fellows from this school over here that are planning to graduate next year, and all together we're going to be taking a special trip together. And that is something that is entirely within your... something like that. If you're a larger school, you might not have to depend on anyone else to plan those types of activities, but you should plan them for yourselves. That if you stick with it, there's a reward. And it's something, it's just about the same every year. but it doesn't grow old because it's new students moving through the program. There can be a wide variety of things that can enter in here, and kind of one funny thing came to me while I was thinking about this driving here. My little boy went to school at Maranatha, and Miss Nolte, she's here today, she was his teacher. And there is something he remembers about his first and second grade homeroom. It's a something special about the first and second grade homeroom in Maranatha. And I guess it would fit in this tradition category here. It's something that students can do there when they're done with their work and they have free time. They can go to a certain little place. And it's something you wouldn't expect to find in a schoolroom. What would that be, Miss Nolte? A little special thing in your room. It's very heavy. The bathtub. A big cast iron bathtub surrounded with bookshelves, filled with pillows. The water is disconnected. It was never connected in the room, schoolroom. And, you know, that's a little special memory for him. And as I thought about it, you know, there are probably a lot of other Maranatha students that remember that bathtub. How many years has that bathtub been in there? Did you ever lay in that bathtub, Karen? How many years ago? 15 to 20 years ago, Karen laid in that same bathtub and read books. It's painted what, pink? Is it painted pink? Okay. That's the type of a thing you can do at your school. And as I thought about it, you know, that's a little tradition. That in the first and second grade room, or maybe at one point it was in the kindergarten room, there's an old cast iron bathtub filled with pillows. And if you get your work done, you get to lay in the bathtub and read books. Okay? And where else in the world do you get to lay in the bathtub and read books? And people all around you, no water, just pillows. Okay? That's a neat little tradition that he has, that because he went to school at a certain place, at a certain time in his life, he was able to do that. And perhaps years from now, if he goes back to visit, he might be my age and he goes back to visit, I can tell you what he's going to do. He might be 30 years old, but when he walks in the first and second grade homeroom, his eyes will find that bathtub if it's still sitting there 20 years from now. Do you have something like that at your school? Do you have a little something that is associated with your school, perhaps with a certain grade at your school, a certain room at your school, that because somebody went to school at your school, they did that? And it might be something silly like a little bathtub, but other people who went to school there experienced the same thing. They've got something common in their background. I laid in that tub and you laid in that tub and we read books. That's the type of a thing that is a little tradition at a school. And I think, you know, as teachers, you know, we don't really see that as much, perhaps, if we don't experience it ourselves. I never went in and Miss Nolte was laying in that bathtub. You know, we see it more as an obstacle. We have to go help Miss Nolte move that bathtub around. But it builds something in the life of the student. And what did it build? It built identity. Okay? I was a first grader there. I was a second grader there. I was a fifth grader at your school. I did such and such that they do at your school. It's a special thing. It's a tradition. When you go about intentionally developing school spirit and respect and participation, interaction, traditions, you're weaving a fabric at your school. And you're bonding your community together in a way that your church cannot bond your community together. Perhaps people from different churches, and they've got something in common now. They were somewhere together where at one point in time, whether they do now or not, they had a sense of us. Okay? Might go to different churches now, rarely see each other, being in different lines of employment work. But at one point, we were an us. Okay? We went to school together. We were schoolmates. We were classmates. Build respect at different levels. Learning to respect property. Learning to respect parents. Learning to respect grandparents. Learning to respect other students. Participation. There's nobody here who's not important. There's nobody here who's not needed. Interaction. It's okay and it's right, and it's actually enjoyable to talk to your grandparents, to talk to your teachers, to talk to other students, to talk to younger students, to talk to older students. And traditions. There are certain things I remember about my school experience that are special and that cause a sense of fondness in my heart when I think back about my school years.
We are creatures of habit, and they will develop. And if we're not intentional about helping those habits develop, well, then the students will develop them. They will, in fact, develop patterns of interaction. There will traditions develop. And sometimes those are bad traditions, whether it's bullying or discourtesy or whatever. Those are traditions also we need to be aware of. I have a handout with simply a list of kinds of things that I've either seen done or been participated in, perhaps for many years, perhaps just once or so. The point is that a character, a climate, will develop at your school. Traditions will be there. There will be patterns. And part of it is thinking about what actually are already there. And if you ever have the opportunity to start a new school, that is when you really want to be intentional, because you have a new opportunity to nudge or shape those traditions in a certain direction. Part of this has also been referred to already as the hidden curriculum. You teach more powerfully by what you do than by what you say. And some of the things that you do are hidden. One of the things we discussed in our school when we began was in any fundraising events, if we had any fundraising events at all, they would have to be items that people who purchased them actually did want and were happy to pay for. And we decided not to ever do anything that involves simply purchasing something in the bulk and reselling it at a more than normal profit because it's for a good cause. Doing that really unconsciously trains your children that as long as it's for a good cause, you can ask somebody more than you would expect to ask him. And so we, two things that we have done are, one is having a food stand at a public auction, which the people really want us to do. And another is, and that's done by the students, an annual sub sale. And that's developed into a pattern. We do it twice a year. And the funds are used primarily for school trips. And we have people actually asking us, when will your next sale be? Because they want them. Be sure to let us know when your next sale is. I've noted here on the handout, be aware of the rhythms. Be aware of the routines. Be aware of the habits in your school. Give some thought to them. Whether it's something as small as a daily, do we line up when we go out for recess? Do we line up when we come in? Give some thought to where the students are placed. Do we line up by grades? When the bell rings, do we just simply enter the building? Do we line up first? Some of those patterns, habits, are very significant, and I'm not telling you which way to do it. You need to think about that for your class, for your school. I've seen teachers make use of those little minutes when students are lined up to leave the room in the afternoon. There may be a minute, there may be 2 minutes, and teachers have used that opportunity to recite a few math facts, to recite a memory passage, to sing a goodbye song, to read a quote, to have a prayer. Again, you may want some variation there. You don't want to get into a rut either. Think of your daily routines, whether it's story time after lunch is an ideal time. When you come in from a recess, a good way to have children settle down is to have a 5-10 minute time of reading. When you come in, immediately go to your desk, pull out a book, and read quietly for 5-10 minutes. This is sustained silent reading. And weekly activities. Think of patterns. What happens every week? Is there anything that happens every week in your school? One teacher had the students in morning devotions on Monday always share something from yesterday's, wherever they were, at church. We have already tackled singing through the Christian hymnary. And I was willing to tackle it. Every single song we got to, we made an attempt. Some of them we talked through. Some of them we made one verse, and some we sang rather well. But we did it every Friday morning, and over a period of about 3 years, I think we got the whole way through. Weekly cleanup. Monthly, there are things such as theme songs. Also, you might have a theme for devotions. We're aware when a month changes as we march through the year. Something is different about this month. Maybe you have a new memory passage for each month. Yearly, this can be a tradition. We have a cleanup before school begins, in which students, families come together and do a cleanup for the school. In the elementary grades, some of these things, by the way, all these things take some time. It's easier to just plan the day's lesson, but you need to be intentional about some of these things and back off and think about them. Summertime is a good time to do that before school starts, or immediately after the school year is over. On that last day, or the day after the last day, the day when you say, if I ever teach again another year, I'm going to do some things different. That's the time to sit down and start listing some of these things that you will do different. Then pull that list out and look at it before the year begins. Think of the big picture. And so in the month of March, teachers at our school in the elementary grades have planned something different for each day of the month, whether it's simply a change of schedule, or whether it's a field trip, something that's different. And then the older grades joined in some of those. We have, for many years, we had a popcorn day. And we brought in a 2.5 bushel basket and filled it with popcorn. And by the end of the day, it was empty. And then later that evolved into a crunchy day where we include carrot sticks and other kinds of crunchies. But the day in which we munch all day. Not too much lunch eaten that day. And we've had a handicap day a number of times in which each person chose a handicap to live with for the day, whether it's being partially blind or being in a wheelchair. The public program, whether it's a year-end program or a spring program, it can be educationally related. We attempt to come up with a theme that pulls from things that the students have learned in various classes and also various skills. We've had the spring program already on the theme of the story of America, and the whole theme was on American history. And another year was on body life, and another year, and we pulled things in various classes. In biology, that was the year we studied biology, and we pulled some things from biology class for that, and also principles from Bible of the concept of the body of Christ in the local body. One year, the whole theme was on changes through the ages. And another time, it was on the life of Christ. And in the midst of following these themes, there are creative writing pieces, read, poems read, chalk talks, role plays, audience involvement, whether it's giving them a sheet to fill out, quizzing them, calling upon them, monologues, and also sometimes some displays of work that was done or up for that program. At the end of the year, many schools have a picnic or a field day. We have attempted, and again, this is a problem. It takes some thought. But each morning of that day, we try to come up with something that involves parents and children in some kind of an interaction that's educational related in some way. Or some years we've done a service activity in the morning, then we have our potluck lunch, and then we have our afternoon more of a field day in which we have runs and ball games and sack races and so on. A couple times one year we simply ask each family, each set of parents, you're going to have 5 minutes. You're going to be up front for 5 minutes. Do something. And so the children sat back there. The parents one at a time went up there either as a couple or the father and mother did something for 5 minutes. One father brought in one of his old hobbies, collection of help boxes, and talked about that. Another year, one of the mothers dressed a chicken while we watched. Somebody else demonstrated taking something apart and putting it together, some parents' skills. We've had visiting speakers come on those days. And one time we had a field trip. We didn't tell them where they were going, but went to three different homes. You know, your people don't get to each other's homes. And so we went to a dairy farm and saw the milking parlor. We went to one of our fathers who has a little bit of a Indian museum in his home and looked at that. Assemblies. Having visiting speakers, Seeing iDog come in, dog trainer, missionary on furlough, career speakers, having a dentist come in or a doctor and talk about his work. Get ideas from parents, solicit ideas from parents what to do here. Some kinds of service activities, doing things for others. At some point, your children should experience doing something for others, whether it's cleaning up the road next to your school. There used to be an organization called Mail for Tots. For some years, we had gotten names. These are all people who are terminally ill, children who are terminally ill or handicapped severely for life. And we wrote letters to them. Singing to shut-ins, making tapes without going off premises. You can write things or make a recording and send it to a shut-in. The interactive activities, we have already switched teachers for the day. It's a rigorous day when you're an upper grade teacher and you spend a day in the first and second grade room. But as you shift teachers for a day, it makes for an interesting experience for everybody and new appreciation the next day for your own students and your own teacher. Cross-age tutoring. We have already for part of a day or a day had older students teach younger classes for a day. Visiting other classes. Have another class come to your room for whatever, a reading, presentation, a creative writing, whatever. But present this thing, get it ready so that we have guests come if it's just children from another classroom. Your all-school recess is a good time for interactive activity. At Christmas time, we traditionally sing to the old folks in our school. Either we go out, which is the easiest, divide into some van loads and go out, visit some people, and we solicit names from families. We don't just go to our own people. We find neighbors, friends, other people to visit and sing to. And occasionally, we have brought them in instead. Now, in that case, some of those people can't come in that you would go out to. But we brought them in for the morning, and in the morning, divided the student body into small groups with several folks in each group and proceeded to have some conversation between the generations and did some interviewing, tried to get some stories from them and find out about their life. And then we have a meal together in which the students sit with the older folk to eat lunch. And parents had to work, be involved in serving that lunch. Think in terms of interaction with the aged and visiting nursing homes. We've done that a number of times, and nursing homes are glad for you to do that. Whether you go and present a little program to them, and then you can have your students follow that up by having them spread out among the group and interview the old folks. I remember one time we were at a nursing home, we did our little singing and program with recitation. And then we told the folks out there, now they're going to be coming out in pairs, have the students do it in pairs because some are very bashful. They're going to be talking to you. The students had a little interview form, some questions they had to ask these older folk to get them going. And we told them that some of these students might be a little bashful, but they'll come out and talk to you. So we encouraged them to go out, and some of them wandered back through there, and there was one older lady there in a wheelchair, and she motioned to one of the pairs, said, "Come over here," she said. And so they walked over and made some very interesting conversation. And then when we went back to school, they proceeded to write up those interviews and little stories, reports. Sometimes children adopt someone in a nursing home for a year and monthly send them something they did in art class, a letter. And then items for certain grades. There can be privileges. When you're in first or second grade, this is where you go. Or you're in fifth or sixth, this is where you go. No other grade does that, but this is where you go. Thanksgiving meal at us for certain grades. Receiving a Bible story book. We use a Bible story book in grades 3, 4, and 5 for 3 years, the Children's Story Bible by Golden Press. And at the end of that time, the child keeps his or her book. Writing a biography. Junior high age, grade 7 and 8. Good age to do that, 6, 7, or 8. Write a serious biography, couple thousand words on some grandparent or friend. We have a pattern where 1 week we shut down our academic program, and in the wintertime the grades 6 or 7 through 10 have, for a solid week, all day, have shop and home ec. Actually, we've had it in a pattern where it's at the end of one and the beginning of the next because it puts a weekend in between. And we involve parents in that. It's much easier to get people to help in that kind of thing for a concentrated period in the middle of the winter than it is for half a day all year. And the juniors and seniors are on those same days, then have a couple days of a career exploration experience, going out into a business place, and also doing some volunteer work together. And then, miscellaneous, if you can adopt or have someone write a school song and use that school song occasionally, or a poem. Regarding exchanging days with schools, there was one time we had a class from another school come. It was a whole junior high from another school came to our school, and we spent the day together. The teachers came along, and we shared classes throughout the morning. So the whole student body had a couple mini classes taught by teachers from the one school and teachers from the other school. We ate lunch together, and then in the afternoon had some games together. One year I had the students have the opportunity to earn a day off school. And if you you could earn that privilege, and it's up to you to come up with what that is, behavior, work, performance, and so on. And if you earn the credit, why sometime in the second half of the year you earn your day off school. So these are intended to be ideas, but think about it. If you do not give some thought to these patterns, to these habits, to these traditions, to the spirit, one will develop. Your school will have traditions, I can guarantee it. But the idea is to give some thought to at least recognize what they are. One of the best ways to recognize them is to visit another school and get in a different climate to have a cross-cultural experience. And then you can come back and say, oh, yes, we do have a way of doing things. And if you don't like the way you do things, then put some nudges to change that. Thank you.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit christianlearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.